Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts, as well as lots of other sports-related podcasts, on the Sports Social Network. I'm joined this week again by Ben. How you doing, mate?
Good, thanks, mate.
Good, good. See you wearing Miami Dolphins cap. Can tell they're 3-0.
Yeah, best start they've had in probably 30 years.
I mean, it's the first time I've ever seen you wear that hat. So, you know, that's one thing. And say again, mate.
My best hat.
Oh, you just save it for probably. Best. Save it for those 3-0 weekends. Yeah. And I'm also joined, as always, by the Lensman, who is NFL agnostic now, former Kansas City Chief.
I think it's the way to go, mate. You with the NFL, I can, you know, I'm not from Kansas City. I don't know anyone from Kansas City. Never going to go there. Why do I support them? Not a single clue.
It's not even in Kansas.
It's not.
And yeah, well, as listeners to this and all the long snapper will know, I've now decided to follow a player rather than a team. And the team he's gone to, with all the excitement of preseason, have now gone to absolute rat shit. So fuck knows. I've got like, it's a bit like the Eddie Stevens, what does he call it? The shit curse. Well, I can't remember what he's called it in our little group. He's in our FRD, and he's got a curse that whatever team or whatever player he...
It's a good pins, story, isn't it?
Shider's touch, is what he calls it. The Shider's touch. I have the Shider's touch of the NFL.
You can probably edit that so it sounds good.
I could do. I mean, it's possible. Unlikely, but possible. Let's get into some podcasts, some rugby, shall we? I want to talk a little bit about grassroots stuff, just to kick off. There's been a lot of interaction and a lot of people putting themselves forward to come on and do a grassroots type pod. Something that I really, really want to do, but I want to sort of plan it properly so we know exactly what we want to talk about. But the reason being is that last week I mentioned that I was going to be making a comeback for Nuki last week. Unfortunately, after going training, seeing me lay some boots on, Phil decided to call the game off rather than have me set foot on a pitch again. Which, you know, I'm not sure we had a front row, but more interestingly, we had three or four backs, all of which were over the age of 40. So not an ideal situation of a club of Nuki's stature, that's for certain. But what it did lead to was a wider point that it seems that Nuki aren't the only club in that situation. There are clubs. I know JB shared an RFU screenshot where every single game in a single league was either a home or away walkover because teams just couldn't raise a side.
Yeah, that's the team that I went training for a few times.
Which one's that, mate?
Ickenham Saints.
Yeah.
One of their players, Erin, is a member at my golf club. We play golf quite often together. It's a lovely little club, great atmosphere. They play out of Ryslip, out of their ground. They've got their own little corner of the bar and stuff. But yeah, it's, I think I said, it's like the market's saturated down here. There's a lot of teams in that sort of Northwest London area. And less players to go around them than ever, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I had conversations with people. There's been people in various WhatsApp groups and messenger groups and, you know, trying to work out why. And one lad was like, oh yeah, but people, there's lots of self-employed people now, and you know, they can't afford to get injured. And I mean, like, that was a new thing. Like rugby hasn't always been full of self-employed people, almost primarily, especially in Cornwall. There's been, you know, builders and farmers and whatever else. I mean, Ben's family almost entirely grew up playing rugby and were mostly farmers, Ben, anyway, weren't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. yeah, and you don't want to be doing a lot of that work if you've smashed yourself up playing rugby. But I guess that has a part of it. Maybe employers are, or clients, if the people are self-employed, are maybe a little less understanding of sport injuries nowadays. But I think the problem is there's so many reasons it's going to be hard to actually sort it out. And I think, you know, 2 years of lockdown has got people used to not doing stuff all day Saturday. So I don't know. I wonder if Friday night under floodlights is an idea, or midweek.
No, I think it is, genuinely.
Go on then. I thought you were just going to carry on then. You waiting for an invite. You don't usually stand on ceremony, Douglas. So,
I just think women are too gobby these days and don't let their husbands out.
There we go. Mall over progressive opinions.
I would say I had that opinion for men.
Oh wow. Or maybe Douglas, it's not the women's fault. It maybe it's the men's fault, because they're actually listening to them rather than going, you know what, I'm going to play anyway.
Maybe there needs to be a reapplication of trousers in a lot of rooms.
Excellent. Just in case.
Don't need this traveling.
Otherwise, you'll be traveling.
Yeah.
Obviously. That was banter.
Please don't use that word on this podcast.
Sorry, mate. Sorry. That was a gag.
It was a gag. It was a jape. It was a little bit of fun.
Before you start wetting the bed and writing to your local MP about how awful I am and criticising me for liking head injuries.
All of which is true. Please don't get your knickers in a twist.
Yeah.
Or your pants in a frenzy.
Hmm. I don't want to assume what gender you are.
No, or in fact that you're wearing pants of any kind. Right, let's move on. Premiership rugby. We had our first Friday night matches in a while. Is it of the season? The first Friday night matches of the season. Is that right?
No, that's bullshit. Who told you that?
No one. I just made it up. I just couldn't remember any Friday night matches being on TV.
I think it was.
Well, because the first Friday night matches were when the Queen died, weren't they? And they got moved.
Maybe. Yeah.
So fuck you.
All right. You got one stat correct in 10 years. Nice one.
Hey, it's an important one. I'm going to hold on to it. But it did. It was... a disappointing one for Bath, Ben. Doug, were you there? Were you at the Wreck on Friday night?
I was there at the Wreck on Friday night.
And Ben, as a Bath fan, first time of actually watching Bath for 80 minutes this season. What did you make of it?
Well, they're still not very good. they had a bit of a comeback towards the end and scored some nice tries, but you know, they were blown out the water by that point. You know, they just outplayed. I thought Tom Dunn did have a really good game for Bath. I thought he was their best player by quite some distance. But, you know, Wasps were just pretty much better all over the pitch. They got two fairly solid centres. And, you know, Launchbury was himself, just got around, was a menace. And, you know, that back row for Wasps has got some injuries, but it's, you know, even what they put out on the day was really strong. Both Willis's and Carr, that was too much for what Bath had, really. You know, I think Di Carpentier's had quite a good season, but I think he's a bit underpowered.
Is there a more... If he was going to play for any team in the Premiership, if you ask any layman who doesn't really watch rugby whatsoever, and you say, and you said, this guy, Richard Di Carpentier, who do you think he plays for? Here's a list of all the teams. Who do you think he plays for? And I think 999 people out of 100 would pick Bath.
Yeah,
Bath. Harlequin, surely.
Yeah.
Ooh. Is he wearing plum trousers?
Well, before he gets to the ground, certainly.
Yeah, I would always have him. I would always go
have
Bath.
A mustard-coloured scrum hat.
But yeah, you're right. He is kind of a bit undergunned. He's a seven specialist, isn't he? And he's just trying to sort of transition. But it must be difficult for a seven specialist to transition to play number eight.
Yeah, I think.
I didn't think he was bad. I didn't think he was bad at all.
I didn't think he was bad, Doug. I just think he was probably out of position. You know, I think he would have done a really good job at six or maybe even seven. You know, they lost the new sign-in after about 10 minutes, so that doesn't help. And they really came into it after Willis's yellow card, which I thought was for nothing, really. I think that was a very unfortunate yellow card.
Yeah. It was harsh, wasn't it?
Backed in the face as much as anything. So, you know,
he almost stood there and Josh McNally ran into him.
Yeah.
It was like a weird coming together. He turned over a lot. I mean, both Willis brothers turned over a hell of a lot of ball, didn't they? And Bath struggled to resource their rucks enough in the first half. And then
you're talking about things never to say on the podcast. Resourcing the ruck. Get out.
What?
Resourcing the ruck.
But they didn't.
I think I saw a stat today that Bath had the least average meters per carry as well. So, you know, if they're struggling at the ruck.
It's not going to help, is it?
Hang on a minute, Ben. Mm. Resourcing the ruck.
What's your problem with resourcing the ruck?
I'm furious about that.
What's your problem with resourcing the ruck?
Who do you think you are?
Someone's...
Fat Guy Monier.
He's like a white Hugo Monier. Oh, well. Anyway, enough of that. The Willis brothers.
They're pretty good. I don't get it with Bath, because I tell you, their worst player on the field was Jonathan Joseph. It was like completely anonymous. It's like their big name players don't turn up. It's very, very, it's a very weird situation. What's going on there? I thought Josh had another good game though. I thought he made a couple of really good turnovers.
He's he's like quietly efficient. And what I like about Josh, and I know you've said this before, he looks absolutely ball bagged after about 7 seconds. and then just looks exactly the same until 80 minutes. He's just got that, it's almost like that permanently confused look on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
And complete, he's just like...
hypoxia from... Yeah. from breathing through his arsehole for 7 seconds.
I'm absolutely fucked. 7 seconds, done. Chases, takes that first kickoff, goes into a ruck, absolutely ball bagged, stays at that level for 80 minutes.
Another guy who played quite well was Muir.
Yeah, he always seems to have good games. Like, you get him the ball, he causes problems.
He always looks like he's going to fall over, though, doesn't he?
Oh. He looks like, you know, when children first start running.
Yeah.
And they're basically in like a slightly uncontrolled fall.
Yeah.
And when he's in full tilt, do you remember that? Do you remember the episode of Friends where Phoebe goes running? It's a bit like that. Just arms and legs everywhere.
I feel like if Mark Wood played rugby, he'd run like that.
Yeah.
He's if you look at Will Muir, he's almost like someone's got Mark Wood in a rack and just stretched him out. And then you get Will Muir. I suppose the only positive for Bath is, you know, it's unlikely they're going to get relegated now. So, you know.
No, I think they're a better side than last year. And you know, they seem to have got roughly half the population of South Africa in the squad now. So hopefully some of those are good.
They've got all the shit ones, haven't they?
Yeah,
I mean, it's Sale hoovered up all the good ones, and then Bartha, when you order a South African off Wish.
I did like the look of that guy that got injured before he went off, though. He seemed like a decent unit.
The open side.
Clouette.
Yeah, I mean, he was at Munster for quite a long time, and he was a good player for Munster in Europe. So I think he's a good signing. And then you've got Kurtzy, Roux and Schumann. Well, that could be any number of South Africans that play in the Premiership. I think every club's got one.
What are you talking about, mate? Quim Roux's Irish.
Oh, sorry.
Quim Roux.
Yeah.
Quim Roux. Oh, Jesus. I mean, Jonesy made a good point on Twitter when he said, you know, you're in sort of semi-trouble when you bring in Van Veltzer off the bench.
I mean, he was a corpse when he left Saints.
Yeah. They just managed to patch him up and keep him going at Worcester. And now he's at Bath.
But I think he's there. I think he's a sort of a coaching.
Yeah.
Like a player coachy kind of role there, I think, but just been pressed into action. I thought Orlando Bailey looked decent as well, to be honest. I've not seen him have many good games, but he looked like he was in control. His kicking was good.
I think that's a fair.
Yeah, they need to just stick with him. I know they've got Piers Francis there now, but they just need to plug Bailey and Ajomo in at 10 and 12. And just let them go, like all season. Just say, right, you're our guys. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah,
because they're not going to achieve anything unless they stick by them.
Well, it can't be worse than last year, can it?
No, so, I mean, no, absolutely.
If Bath are fully fit, they've got a really good backline, but they're never fully fit, and they haven't been for what 15 years. Mm. You know, that injury list is always enormous. So,
I would say. On Bailey, though, that there are at least four players of roughly the same age that I would put a 10 in front
ahead of him. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd probably put Finn Smith, Atkinson at Wasps, who was in the same game. Obviously, Marcus Smith. I'd say he's on about the same sort of level as James Grayson. In that he can do a job, but he's not going to win the Premiership.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's slightly more dynamic than Grayson, but you're right. He's never going to tear the world up, but you've got to give him, Bath have to give him the opportunity. They have to give him a sustained run of games, and I think the same with Ajomo. And I think they put them both in there and let them fly. Like you say, there's no real consequences for them not doing that. So maybe that's the way forward. With Wasps, obviously, you know, packed with attacking talent. Doug's favourite face of rugby, Josh Bassett, scoring another couple of tries.
His face got an absolute pasting as well, didn't it? So
almost rearranged.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
What? Any thoughts about what's going to happen to Wasps? Obviously, we'll come on to Worcester in a little bit.
Well, I think they're brown bread, aren't they?
Well, all the reports are suggesting the same, and that, you know, they've got obviously ready cash to be able to continue to pay players and do whatever it is they're doing now. But that can't go on forever. Surely, I mean, until they're in a position where they can't pay their players, and the administrator comes in and whatever, then they can carry on. But I can't believe it's in any way sustainable. So we'll have to just wait and see.
I think this is something these Premiership clubs are going to have to look at, though. I mean, what is their end game? Because none of them are going to make Premiership money, football money, are they? They're not money-making enterprises. So anyone that buys into it needs to buy into it knowing that they're going to essentially break even at best. And I'm not sure with the world and the current financial climate as it is, that there's going to be a mass of people queuing up to do that at the moment.
No. Maybe so they need small school gangsters.
They may have, they may have cash on the hip ready to go, but if they're in administration, it's because it's not sustainable. And if it's not sustainable, it's not going to be sustainable just because someone buys them. That person's got to buy them knowing they're going to take over basically a loss leading business.
They need one of those. They need one of those gangsters like that Untold NHL story.
Yeah,
to come in and start
effectively. You know, yeah,
maybe launder some money.
You know, they weren't sustainable when they were at Wickham. They're not sustainable now. They've got their own ground. What's going to change? Because if they win all the competitions, it's still not going to make them a money making enterprise. It seems the same with Worcester. I just think they're in a position where everybody knows they're bad businesses. So why get involved with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get. I don't really want to get into all of this too much depth. One, because I don't really know what I'm talking about. And two, it's quite a depressing and sobering subject. It's just not nice to think that, you know, whilst we knew that rugby isn't particularly profitable in the Premiership, when the clubs are going to the wall, there's a lot of people that are impacted by that, jobs, families, and all that sort of stuff. And it's just quite a sad proposition. So on that note, let's move on to Saturday. Right, let's go to Saturday's games. Let's start with the game. Was it at the Mattioli East Welford Road?
No, it was a Cinch Franklin's Gardens.
It was at Cinch Franklin's Gardens, where star of the show, Carl Dixon, was in charge for Leicester versus Northampton. Ben, I know you watched this one. I watched a fair amount of it, and it was hard going. It was hard work. I got to be honest. I find Carl Dixon extremely hard work to watch as a referee, especially as he used to be a player. I just would have thought he would be far less fussy. And, you know, without wanting to just bag one individual for ages, it's quite frustrating that given the fact that he's been there and done it, you think that he would have a bit more empathy, but it doesn't seem to. What was your sort of early takeaways on this game, Ben?
Oh, I didn't think he made any outrageously bad decisions. It was just that all three of the yellow cards, you could have seen a reason not to give a yellow card at that point. Like, I think Northampton were cruising for one because they gave away a lot of penalties on their line, but the actual yellow card was for something that happened on the halfway line. Then there was one in a scrum, which is always, you know, we were talking about it before we started recording. That one's always a little bit, seems a little bit unfair on one player. And then, of course, the last one was off a try. So, you know, I think a referee at our level would have just forgotten about that yellow card because the try was scored. But it was quite an enjoyable game, I thought. You know,
when there was some rugby played, because it was just so bitty, so stop start. It was just like, it never had any flow.
Northampton started off very strongly, but, you know, Leicester were always on top in the scrums and lineouts, so it was always going to be a hard day for Saints, and so it proved. And like you say, Eogan just got absolutely pummeled by
Dan Cole folded him up like some kind of paper expert.
I mean, I can't see any good reason why Dan Cole's not in the England squad, because, you know, Will Stewart's
maybe he's just too handsome.
Maybe that's what it is, Russ. But, you know, if he came on with half an hour to go in any international game, you wouldn't be too worried, would you? You know, he'd do a decent job in the scrum. He gets around the pitch quite well. And I do think that, you know, they should probably have another look at him.
I've got to disagree. Like, we've got to start moving forward. Got to start moving on from Joe Marler and Dan Cole. And
Sinclair's your starter, isn't he? And then who after that? Is anyone particularly standing out?
Not standing out, I suppose. Schickling, is he on the same side?
None of us.
I couldn't tell you. None of us know. No. It's a guess, isn't it?
you know, I think, you know, Saints scored a couple of really good tries, and then unfortunately Leicester's power told, and, you know, a slightly fortunate try, the one Martin scored, but, you know, fair play to him for being at the right place at the right time. And I mean, I'm trying to get through this game without saying anything about Stewart, but I was just pleased to see Stewart back.
Well, he got himself on the score sheet, didn't he?
Got a hat trick.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, you didn't want to... He scored a hat trick, but yeah, you didn't want to mention him.
Yeah, he scored a hat trick against a rugby league team.
Yeah.
Actually, one less than a rugby league team. Because of Carl Dixon's robo hand.
Yeah. But, you know, it was...
Nobody knows where the remote control's hidden. It's in the crowd somewhere, and it just depends which team's fan has it. And every time there's a breakdown, it just clicks a button and it automatically sends an impulse to put his hand up and blow a whistle.
I see your point, but I think Leicester were always going to win, weren't they?
I don't think so.
It's hard to tell because the second half was so much of a non-event for the simple fact that next to no rugby was played.
Yeah.
Because all that happened, it just went scrum, penalty, scrum, penalty, scrum, and it absolutely killed the game. I felt sorry for it for a year.
These scrum penalties, like, it's sort of counter, like, I don't understand the punishment, because if you're getting pasted in the scrum, the last thing you should do as a referee is send someone from that scrum off, because you're just going to get pasted. If eight men are getting pasted, seven are certainly going to get pasted, and that's just going to lead to another penalty.
And this is the point I was saying to Ben beforehand, right? Yes, you know, the matchup is Dan Cole bending Eogan in half, right? That is the matchup, the one-on-one matchup. However, the physics of a scrum mean that it's essentially eight people against eight people. It's not just one person. He's got a lock that's in behind him that should be helping him. Why is it always the front row that is the one getting the yellow card?
Referees haven't got a fucking clue about what's going on, just like everybody else in the ground.
They sit together like that, and I'm for those of you listening, which is all of you, I'm putting my fingers together in such a way where you've got...
I wouldn't guarantee that.
two scrums going against each other, and at any point in time, they both just go like that in a split second, and the referee in that split second decides, oh, it's you, or it's you. And how many times have you seen teams dominate a scrum, go scrum line out, scrum penalty line out, scrum on the 5-meter line, and then get turned over in the scrum? Oh, penalty against you. Because the referee does not have a fucking clue. So the way to stop it...
My least favourite thing about that is when you get to the 5-metre line and then you get referees who cannot wait to call an offside on the goal line. Like, it makes a blind bit of difference getting off whether your hands are 6 inches in front of the goal line or not.
It's
just like they're itching to cause... for the penalty to be called, and it boils my piss, because then what you're left with is a situation where the only thing that's going to stop that penalty occurring
is a try,
because apparently getting over the goal line and not grounding the ball isn't enough of an advantage.
No, absolutely. And so
it's one of those things that Mark Atkinson, I don't know if you probably haven't listened to the Egg Chasers already this week. I listened to it on the way in the car today. But Mark Atkinson was on there and he was saying he has conversations with his dad about how his dad says, well, why has that happened? That shouldn't happen. And Mark Atkinson said, he goes, well, yeah, I know it shouldn't, but that's just how the game is these days. And it's the case with these advantage penalties and the scrum penalties. It is literally a complete lottery. As like one person, you can see, and you often hear a commentator will contradict what the referee said,
It happens on BT Sport
every
all the time.
Single scrum. Happens every single scrum. And to that end, that just shows you that the penalty at the scrum has now become too much of a weapon. There needs to be, like in Call of Duty, when somebody gets a new loadout, comes on a gun, and it just ruins everything because everyone just uses that
no setup. Mate, because I'm 40 years old and not a child.
You're ginger and a cunt though.
I can't refute that.
Well, they do this thing where they rebalance the I haven't played Call of Duty for ages. I just, you know, they rebalance everything because something becomes too powerful for the game. It makes it unfair. And I think the scrum penalties need something. There needs to be something. If you're resetting scrums on the 5 meter line and that you're getting a penalty, then another penalty, then another penalty, then a yellow card, then another penalty, then another yellow card, and nothing's actually happening in the game. Maybe we need a situation whereby you can only have two consecutive penalties and then you've got a kick. You've got to make a decision. Because what happened in that Saints game isn't good for a spectacle, is it? Like 12 against 15 isn't good for anyone.
Yeah, and I agree. And there's two things.
That's not just me being a Saints fan saying that.
There's more than one thing at play there. I mean, yes, the Saints were on a warning on their goal line, right? But they somehow managed to turn it over from a line out, maybe. Got up the pitch, and then he yellow carded Augustus at the halfway line, or even in the Leicester half, just because it was the next offence. And it was like, I mean, I get they're on a warning, but they're on a warning for persistent infringement on the try line. Like, that makes no sense. Mitchell yellow card. Once they've scored the try, as in, like, what Mitchell did had absolutely no impact on Leicester scoring a try. It had nothing. So what's the point in yellow carding him? Like, there wasn't one. So why not have a bit of common sense and go, you know what? Watch yourself, because if that had gone to ground and they'd lost the opportunity, you would have been in the bin. As it was, it wasn't even another phase. It was just like it went into hand and it went bang bang try. There wasn't any impact.
Here's my feeling on what could rebalance yellow cards. Work it the same as ice hockey. So if you're yellow carded, you're off until the opposition score, and then you come back on.
Yeah.
You've served the penalty because the opposition have scored points.
Yeah. Or I'd just say, like, the scrum penalty, I turn most scrum penalties into a free kick, and where you cannot ask for another scrum. So if it's a free kick, if the referee thinks that you've taken a scrum down, right, just by dropping it, it's a free kick. And if you're a nine worth any of your sort, then you'd realise that 16 of the biggest blokes on the pitch are all having a big cuddle, and you've got the ball that you can tap and go with. That'll quicken the game up, and that'll allow more ball in play time. Because at the moment, it's time off, scrum, time on, kick, penalty, kick, line out. Invariably, somebody will knock it on. Another scrum, another penalty. I mean, I'd love to see the scrum completion to scrum penalty statistics over a course of a Premiership weekend. So how many scrums are awarded? And of those scrums, how many of those led to penalties, free kicks, and successful completions or resets? Because I bet you the completed scrum statistic could be in the minority against resets and penalties.
I think it would be every week, wouldn't it?
Yeah, which isn't the case. The scrum should only really be a means of restarting the game where two teams push against each other. But teams don't push against each other like straight. Not that they've ever really done that, but they're not trying to push the other team off the ball. They're trying to push the team to a position where they drop for a penalty. So the whole means of scrummaging doesn't really exist anymore. For most teams, it's not a means of restarting the game. It's a means of getting a penalty, winning a penalty. And that power needs to be taken away from the scrum. because that is part of the reason that is making it unwatchable.
What's your answer, Ben?
I think it's very difficult to have an answer in rugby because you bring a new rule in and within five games, most of the coaches have found a way to turn it to their advantage. I think if you made it a free kick for everything, you might end up with teams putting in really small packs.
Well, they're trying to make the game safer. They make these like smaller hits and all that sort of stuff.
You know, they probably find cleverer ways than that to subvert it. But I do wonder if...
Maybe it'll make teams try and scrummage better because if you're going to push a team off the ball,
I don't think teams are intentionally scrummaging badly. They just get pasted every now and again. I've seen Iogun absolutely put people to the sword. I've seen Dan Cole get folded up by vastly.
I don't think teams necessarily are scrummaging to a point where they're trying to drive the other team off the ball.
Russ, I think it'd be a shame to completely take it out. Entirely. So, for example, it was a long time ago, but there was a game where England just scrummaged Ireland off the park and just, you know, they were pushing them back 10 metres.
Well, England lost the World Cup final like that.
Yeah. And if a team is doing that to someone, they deserve the penalty.
I agree entirely.
But I think anything like a slip or a slip bind or something like that, or, you know, sometimes they just slip and fall on their face and get a penalty against them, don't they?
That's the point I'm making. The ones where they go in, the ball goes in, and within about a second, both teams have done that, and a referee's just made it up.
I guess make it a free kick in that instance, but or a tap penalty. Maybe the penalty can't be kicked to touch. It can only be kicked either to goal or maybe not even to goal. Maybe you just have to tap penalty. Or...
Can you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but when back in the day, if you were pushed off the ball in a scrum and you saw a scrum trundling down the pitch and one team went completely over the top of the other, that wasn't a penalty. Your advantage is the fact that there are eight men on the floor underneath your eight men. Yeah. You've got a massive advantage.
Yeah.
But it seems to me now that a penalty, like just being pushed backwards in a scrum is a penalty. Yep. That doesn't need to happen.
Is it partly because not much the reason it is a penalty, but teams aren't so keen to attack from it? Phil would be the person to ask this, but if your pack's going forward that fast, it must be quite difficult for the number eight to pick up the ball. So you risk
be better.
Exactly. But I think that might be one reason why teams are reluctant to go for it.
But, you know, referees, a scrum gets, you know, the front row comes up in a scrum and it's immediately a penalty or a reset. It's never just allowed to sort of progress to the point where the scrum's so dominant that your advantage is the fact that you've taken eight men out of the game and your eight men are on their feet.
Also, if the ball's at the back of the scrum, get the fucking thing out. Rather than have to, you know, the teams are purposefully leaving it in there when it's won.
Well, that was a penalty, while, wasn't it? They were saying that, you know, you're not going to win a penalty if the ball's at the back. You can use that. The ball's available to use. Yeah. You've got to use it. It's the same as keeping it in at the bottom of a ruck, right? And from that regard.
Yeah, use it.
I hate to say it, but I think Russ might have hit upon the answer about 2 years ago when he said a time limit for scrums.
Just get in, get it done, get it out.
If it's not sorted in 30 seconds, you know, if you haven't started the scrum in 30 seconds, then...
Well, that's rugby league, that is, isn't it?
They have and that's more around the setting it up and all the other stuff, people ambling around, you know, but...
All that has helped design these props and hookers now that are absolute behemoths, because they can take a minute and a half to clean their studs off and have a breather and a drink and a chat and... get down and I'll collapse. I will start again. We'll do it all again.
Yeah.
Before you know it, 5 minutes have gone out of the game.
That's why you've got a ball in play time of about 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And 95, 100 minute matches.
Well, before, you know, we could lament the problems that rugby's got every week, it seems. But the issue for me is that a lot of these issues are so easily fixed.
I don't know why you wouldn't have
a yellow carded player for a technical infringement reinstated once a point had been scored because he's served the penalty.
Imagine World Rugby or the RFU or whoever carrying out some kind of fan-based survey. Imagine how many ideas they'd have to fix the game.
Yeah. I can tell you how many they'd use.
About as many hairs that are on the top of my head.
Niche
ideas. Right, let's move on anyway. Saracens did their best to throw away a decent lead and then come back to beat Gloucester Saracens bounced back and a last minute conversion from Owen Farrell.
From Fazza,
yeah. After old Wollstonecroft had bagged a couple of tries in the last 5 minutes. I mean, a game Gloucester probably should have won, and they'll be kicking themselves not to come away from Barnet with a victory there, especially, having been in the lead. Bristol, another close game, beat London Irish 40-36 at Ashton Gate. I didn't watch much of this because I couldn't, basically. So
yeah, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the scoring this week? Can everyone just chill out a bit, or do we have a 9-6? Any chance for 9-6?
The NFL, the scoring this week was more to my liking.
Yeah, that 11-10 game.
Yeah, that was the second in history, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nearly a number wang.
Yeah, exactly.
Scorigami,
sorry.
Number wang. What is number wang? I know it's funny. Mitch McWeb, isn't it? Oh, that's
just
it.
Where the host is just shouting numbers.
That's number wang. So of some of the highlights that I've seen, and we'll come on to that actually, because it leads us nicely into the Exeter Harlequins game on Sunday, which seemed to be the epitome of attack versus defence, where Exeter said, well, first half, we'll have the ball and we'll score a lot of tries. And then second half, you can have the ball and see if you can score more tries than we did in the first half. And we promise not to tackle each other. I didn't watch the first half of the game. I turned it on at halftime, watched the first 15 minutes. And I don't know whether I can remember Exeter making a tackle. It was absolute shambles. And then it went uncontested scrums. No, yeah. Was it uncontested? Am I getting my games mixed up? Did they have a period of uncontested scrums in the Exeter game?
I don't know, mate. I didn't watch it. I've watched highlights, which was essentially... I feel a little bit bad for the editors because essentially they were just editing in the tries and there were so many of them that they couldn't even put the whole tries in. It was basically just a bloke running across the line.
It was Exeter Quins because they lost... They lost the hooker. They lost Jack Walker to injury. And Head came on. And then he had to go off for a HIA, which is ironic.
Right.
Mr. Head going off for a HIA. So they bought a prop on, but they didn't have a hooker. So they went uncontested. And all Harlequins just went pop. It's literally uncontested scrum. Out the back, one phase. And Northmore basically strolled through the Exeter defence. Through a massive gap off first phase. Off an uncontested scrum. I mean, that's what we don't want to get into a rugby league style head and feed type thing. Obviously, we just had a big scrum discussion, but uncontested scrums, if there was a bigger joke than scrum penalties, it's when scrums become uncontested, because it was fucking horrible. It's not good to watch at all. But the level of defense was an abomination. And it's hard, and everybody's was wanking on, oh, this is brilliant attacking rugby. You know, there was some good stuff played. Don't get me wrong. There were some nice passes and there was some like But from what I'd seen, neither team had to work that hard to look good. It was training ground stuff, you know, like unopposed type stuff where the defense is like, we'll be there and, you know, you can look really good running your moves and you can look really slick and we'll just be defenders to fix and we won't tackle you. We'll just kind of arm tackle you and we won't go full pelt because we know you're just trying to get your moves off. That's what it felt like. It was really strange. And then there was the final sort of piece of the jigsaw, the alleged forward pass at the end of the match, where Harlequins conveniently forgot about the forward pass for Murley for his try in the first half, both of which were marginal, neither of which could be conclusively proven either way. So they both just need to be either chalked off or left on and forgotten about. But Harlequins have liked to
wank on about it. If the last 5 years of doing a rugby podcast has taught you nothing, Russ, it's that rugby fans love pleading absolute woe on themselves.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, for every single decision, there's always a still frame that would prove otherwise. The absolute nauseousness of it is... I don't even pay any attention anymore. When you see this is absolute red card all day, it's like, next, don't care. Think there's been a rape up there. Some of the complaints will be false.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense. It wasn't a forward pass. You know why? Because the ref didn't give it.
No, true. And of all the shit I just gave Dixon, I'm going to give a bit of praise to Tempo for the way that he reffed it. I think he was clear. He made the decision, and he stuck with it. You know, they couldn't give him conclusive proof. He could have stood there for 3 minutes and gone, is there any other angles? No, there's no more angles. Well, can we show me again? He could have done all of that, but instead he went, well, if there's no more angles, you can't prove to me it was forward. It stays as it is. Perfect.
Yeah.
Good refereeing. Thank you very much. Yeah. Wish there was more of that.
He's basically saying, I've decided this. Yeah. And if anyone wants to come and have a chat with me after the game, we can have a chat after the game.
Yeah. Perfect.
And you know what? I care not for your opinions.
Thanks, Tempo.
Cheers, Tempo.
It's you know, it was nice to see, and I just wish, and I hate to keep banging on about the TMO because I've done it on countless occasions. That cunt, whoever it might be, needs to speak when spoken to.
Who's that? Sorry,
any of them, any TMO ever, just any of them. Speak when you're spoken to.
For sure.
Do not.
Them over the commentary.
Yeah. Oh, there's a knock on there. There's a knock on there. Fuck off. Not your job, mate. Not your job. If the referee's missed a knock on at the bottom of a ruck and the assistants have missed it, play on. Guess what? Keep the game going.
That's not so bad if it's like, oh, yeah, that was forward or something. It's when it's like, right, I've spotted something 5 phases ago that I want you to come back and take a look at.
No, yeah, that annoyed me because that time doesn't get put back in the game, does it?
If it's foul play, right, and they need, there's going to be a sanction for whatever reason, I kind of get that. If a guy is knocked it on slightly at the bottom of a ruck in midfield, neither assistant seen it and neither's the referee, right? Play the fuck on. You don't need Rosie going, Craig, there's been a knock on there by Wasps number 4. No, don't need it. All I want to hear from the TMO is if someone's done something bad enough that requires a yellow or red card, or the last piece before a try where there may have been an infringement.
But it's very rarely something bad enough for a red card, is it? It's always, oh, you need to go back 5 phases because someone brushed someone else's chin. And it's just wasting so much time and it breaks up the game. And like, you might have just started to get a bit of interest in how this sort of move or phase is going. It's like, well, we got to stop and we got to go and see if someone brushed his jaw It's just pointless. I don't really mind them saying, "Oh, there is a knock," but just going back that far just is a waste.
I think it was Rugby Inside Line that said something about, "Oh, well, maybe we need to give more powers to the TMO." I was like, "Well, what's the fucking point? You may as well take the on-field referee out of it and have a fucking drone, a robot drone referee it with a microphone,
engaging with anything that Wand ever has put on Twitter."
It's fucking madness. Let's have robot referees.
What rugby needs is more litigious action.
Yeah.
Less ball in play time and more TMO. Yeah. Let's have some chats. Basically, they're having a big video chat.
Let's just
what rugby needs? Less rugby. That way there can be less head injuries.
Solved head injuries. Less rugby. Same amount of matches, less rugby within those matches.
Same amount of matches, less rugby, more TMOs.
It's a nice ref, but full of wires.
Right. Okay.
You could literally have 17 TMOs, couldn't you?
Yeah, just dot them around. Just have them all in drones. Yeah. And if you hit a drone out of the sky with a high kick, it's a penalty.
And any time they have a little thumb switch that any time they want to come in, it makes a noise over the tannoy. Like that.
What about public address system?
Multiple CCTV cameras, and if someone commits a high tackle, just straight away laser vaporizes them.
Or in Running Man, where they got that perimeter fence, but it's an invisible perimeter, and if they cross it, their head gets blown off.
Yeah, I was thinking Parks and Rec when the Bolivians come to town. Right to jail. I tackled jail.
Right, enough fun, right? We've got 4 minutes, 22 seconds before we get cut off. And I refuse to start another Zoom call. So, Doug, 1 minute's worth of any other business, if you've got anything.
I really, really, really like trifle.
Boozy trifle or standard trifle?
Any trifle, just enjoy a nice trifle. A ladyfinger, one of the most underrated pudding implements.
Oh, ladyfingers, ladies' fingers.
That's all I wanted to say.
Sometimes sometimes the ladyfingers get a bit soft. It becomes a big mush.
You're a specialist subject now.
Dessert. No, it just becomes a big mush. Big mush. Right, Ben. A minute for you.
A big well done to my Uncle Chris, who hosted a barn party down on the farm.
Did it turn into an all-night rave?
It very much did turn into an all-night
rave. Was it Millennium themed, hosted by Jared from Gladiators?
Close. But he managed to raise over £2,000 for MS charities.
Brilliant.
So well done to Chris.
Well done, Chris.
Awesome. Well done. Well done, Chris. I'd just like to say a big get well and go well to Farm Vets Manchild, James, who...
The schoolgirl's favourite.
Definitely, he will be a schoolgirl's favourite. 100% Scottish. Who broke his humerus, snapped his humerus in a grass buggy incident at the weekend. Poor kid has been in Trillisk since Sunday night. Dosed up on whatever, still not been
having
operated.
A great
on.
Time.
Still not been operated on. Apparently, they tried to manipulate it back into after 2 days. Not sure what to do. Let's manipulate it back into place. Oh no, that didn't work. Operate on it again. Poor kid, 13 years old. But I'm sure he'll have a really cool cast and might stop him masturbating for a few weeks.
As if hospital sheets need to be stiffer.
And I'm talking about Phil, not his son.
Before we go, Russ.
Doug.
Jacking off them all over Invitational to play golf in France when there are people literally flying from America.
I'm not jacking it off. I come back on the Thursday, I told you that.
Mate, you got to be there.
I'll be there.
People have spent money, Russ.
I'll be there. I mean, I'm not.
Is that? Are you going to be there? So we definitely ain't playing golf at Trevosan, are we?
Maybe. I mean, what's happened
is
I have a shit bloke. That's a fact. And my admin is horrific.
You're a shit bloke.
My ability to arrange anything, is fallen by the wayside. So my apologies, but we'll sort something out definitely. And I will endeavour to be present at the MOI in whatever guise that might find itself. So there you go. Anyway, let's get out of here before Doug abuses me anymore. We will see you all next week for some more Mall Over, hopefully. We'll catch you later. Go well.
Cheers. Russ.
Yeah.
Let's talk tomorrow about sorting out this other thing. Podcast Network.